That's hooey in applesauce. Three words for that. Ooh, la, and la. When I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Ah, it's gangbusters.
Damn a shake in NFL. In NFL and Dave. Damn a shake.
Hi and hello, football fans. Your old pal Dave, Dave Damashek here. Welcome to episode number 29 of the Dave Damashek football program. Coming up today, we're going to jump into the DeLorean, take it up to 88 miles an hour, see who is going to win the big games of the weekend, and we're also going to be talking to Jeff Perlman, the man who has written the book Sweetness, The Enigmatic Life of Walter Payton. Getting a lot of good reviews and a lot of negative noise from Walter Payton and Chicago Bears fans, so looking forward to kibitzing with this fella. In the meantime, let me say hello to our co-host, or whatever we call him here, a man whose pick six column on NFL.com right now talks about what NFL players would make great head coaches, this off of the news that the White Sox almost hired Paul Konerko to be a player manager. I think that would be cool if we had more of that going on. It's Adam Rank. What's going down, Rank?
What's up, boss? Thanks for having me.
Yes,
I'm doing great.
Yeah. So who was number one? Who's your favorite? What NFL player should be a coach?
Jay Cutler.
Because?
He's stoic on the sidelines, mm-hmm. just like in the image of Bud Grant and Tom Landry. We saw last year when his team was playing in the NFC Championship game, he was on the sidelines emotionless, just like yes. you like your coach to be.
That's right. Yeah, that makes good sense. Yeah, he's no Jim Schwartz or Rex Ryan pumping fists or anything.
Yeah, that's too much.
Stone-faced, yeah.
That's too much. I also like Tim Hightower.
Why so?
Be a coach. So he could figure out who's going to be the running back for the Redskins.
Oh, that's a good idea for any fantasy player.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, any fantasy player. All right, listen, yes, all sorts of fantasy news out there, too, to be consumed by you at NFL.com and on NFL Network, NFL Fantasy Live, 6 days a week. And you can look for my jazz, my hooey and applesauce at davedamashek.nfl.com. The Shame Report, thanks to so many of you who have been checking that out of late. And a lot of you ask, a new NFL, the alternate universe,
Ooh.
That's coming up very soon in animated form and all the other jazz. The Uniform Monitor, in mm-hmm. fact, I should plug that.
Yes, please.
Every
do.
Sunday morning, as soon as we get off the air from the fantasy show rank, I sit down at the computer and I bang out my my highlights and lowlights in sartorial terms.
Mm-hmm. Is there one you're looking forward to this week?
I don't like, this is more college football. I don't like this trend, and I probably am going to have to speak out on it this weekend, is the thing of, like, the stripes on the pants are now, like, they almost look like scratches from a beast of some sort.
Oh, yes.
You know, Baylor has that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for it. It looks very cats-like. It looks like you're not so much a football player as a... as a somebody on the Broadway musical Cats, you know what I mean?
Right. What do you feel about the Oregon Ducks when they have that kind of metal-looking thing they put on their shoulders?
I'm not a huge Oregon Ducks fan, but I don't hate it as much as most people do. There are far worse uniforms out there. Maryland is one of the ones I'm talking about. I'm also being told right now, in my ear, by our producer, the Wilk tie that we're going to be speaking with Broncos wide receiver Eric Decker in a little
while.
Is
that for real?
This show is jam-packed, Rank.
Wow.
It's like a real show or something.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to talk to him about the story of the week.
It is
a cloud that has obscured every other story in the NFL. Tim Tebow, did you hear, is going to be the starting QB.
Wait,
not
what?
Not this Sunday. Next Sunday. So we're
going to
have we have more than a week's worth of this jazz going. And I talked about it on the Shame Report, and I'll repeat myself here. And I know people don't like this opinion. A lot of people don't. But Tim Tebow is not good. He is not good enough to be an NFL quarterback. He is tailor-made to be a great college quarterback. He was ideal for that. He was one of the biggest players out on the field in college. Not so in the NFL. Yeah, everybody says, well, he can bounce off of guys. He can't take a pounding like that when that is the only thing he's capable of doing. To liken him to Cam Newton or Ben Roethlisberger, who aren't inclined to, whose only thing that they can do is run the football, that would be a problem. They would also eventually wear down too from that. That's the only thing Tebow can do, is tuck the ball under and run. When there's no threat of him beating you up top, that's going to be a short-lived little run he has of success, is the idea that he can take off with the football.
But
he poses no threat downfield. He literally struggles, and I do know the difference between literally and figuratively. He literally struggles to get the ball 30 yards downfield. That is unacceptable for an NFL quarterback.
But did you not see what happened at the end of the game against the Chargers?
I did, and here's what it is owed to. The Chargers did not know Tim Tebow was going to be in the game.
Oh, for crying out loud.
When an NFL team has a week to game plan for Tim Tebow, they will be able to take him away. You'll see.
That happened last. He did it over a number of games last year, too. Everybody had a chance to game plan for him then. He still did fine. This is the same thing, but you were saying, that not you specifically, but critics were saying about Cam Newton. Like, give the guys enough time to game plan for Cam Newton. They'll find a way to stop him. Still haven't done it yet.
Well, first of all, let me say this. Those two guys aren't really all that comparable as far as I'm concerned, because Cam Newton throws a dynamite deep ball. And I also forecasted Cam Newton would be a great NFL quarterback. Like everybody else, I didn't think he would from week one be a great NFL quarterback. But those two guys, that's where the comparison ends, is that they're both are great runners and that they're relatively young. I absolutely, Tim Tebow, his throwing motion takes forever. He looks like a big league pitcher thrown out of the stretch.
Valenzuela, maybe?
Yes, like Fernando or anyone else you want to talk about. He does not look like besides that, he's just wildly inaccurate. And I joke about it, but only half kiddingly. Brandon Lloyd happens to bail him out. I mean, he goes 4 of 10. Look at the numbers. He goes 4 and 10, 4 out of 10 throws against the Bolts. And that's because Brandon Lloyd is making spectacular, impossible catches.
Or is he just putting it in a place where only Brandon Lloyd can catch it?
All right. Well, listen, I think that this is not going to work out. I completely understand why the Broncos want him in there. In fact, their fans, too, may as well make it exciting. Kyle Orton is anything but exciting. He might be a capable NFL QB, but he doesn't inspire a lot of enthusiasm if you're sitting there and you have season tickets. I can see, if I were a Broncos fan, yeah, give us the kid. And for that matter, if you're John Elway trying to make decisions about the organization going forward, at the very least, you have to understand, did we just completely waste this first-round draft pick? Do we need to reset things when we're drafting next spring? I understand all that. I'm just telling you what's going to happen. He is not going to work out. At the end of the season, it will not be, mark my words, I guarantee you, I'm going to make another guarantee. Here's another, this is my first guarantee.
Okay.
I guarantee you, in late December, early January, the buzz will not be Tim Tebow is obviously the number one quarterback for the Broncos next year. They will be looking to turn the page. Hear me now, believe me later.
So it's the best of both worlds for him. Either Tim Tebow goes out, proves he can be a number one quarterback, they win a couple of games, they're competitive, yeah. If not, they're not competitive, it goes the other way, and then they're in the sweepstakes for the number one overall pick. I don't know who that pick would be, because we're not allowed to talk about who that pick might be, but they would be in line probably for a guy who could play.
Adam,
they could play the same position as Tebow.
All right, well, and here's I'm going to make one other guarantee for you, and I can't wait to talk about this
two
stuff.
Two guarantees?
Yes, here's another guarantee for you. This and you
show
know,
29.
The Tim Tebow one feels a little bit easier for me than this one I'm going to make for you. Get ready for this. The Philadelphia Eagles we're going to jump in the DeLorean, and we'll see once and for all what happens this week. But the Philadelphia Eagles are not only going to beat the Redskins this week, they're about to go on a run. Mike Vick's about to catch fire, and that team's about to go on a run and get themselves back into the playoff picture.
And you're guaranteeing both of these.
I am guaranteeing it. Hear me now, believe me later. Like that guy in Philadelphia has to walk, I guess, or something from San Francisco to Philadelphia. I'm not going to make some cockamamie gamble on it. You know?
Right.
But, yeah, go ahead. Stick your neck out, Rank. Say what you have to say, or are you not man enough to make a guarantee?
No, I think you may be going 0-2 on both these.
Well, like I say, hear me now, believe me later. Quickly, Rank, because we obviously have much to get to with Jeff Perlman and Eric Decker coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Number 29, we like to honor the episode number by talking about the player who wore it best in NFL and sports history overall. Eric Dickerson, tough to beat that one. I think he's got to be our number one.
Absolutely, no question about it.
No question about it. What if I throw a name of your beloved Halos, Rod Carew?
Not a fan.
What do you mean not a fan?
Not a fan of Rod Carew.
How can you not be a fan of the arguably the best angel ever? Is that
not a, no?
Who's the best angel ever? Tim Salmon.
Tim Salmon is an all-time angel because he went
Nolan Ryan.
He went his entire
Troy
career.
Gloss.
See, but the thing with Tim Salmon is he went his entire career as an angel.
John Lackey.
It's a lot. Lackey's doing now for the Angels, beating Boston, what he couldn't do. But as a
Scott
member of the Red Spezio?
Sox.
The Spees.
Who's the best Halo of all time if it's not Rodney Carew?
It is going to be Tim Salmon.
Well, that's true, then I'm sorry for your franchise's sorry history.
Actually, or it could be Chuck Finley, because there's not a lot. The Angels. The Angels weren't a team that grew a lot of players.
Not
back
Bobby
in the day.
Gritch.
Gritch, but he was an Oriole.
So your guy cannot have ever worn another uniform.
I'm just saying there's not a lot of Angel guys who are Angel to Angel their whole career. Even Garrett Anderson went out.
Wally World Joyner?
He left. They traded him.
Wow, you are really hardcore about your loyalty issues.
It's not about loyalty, but until Tim Salmon came along, we didn't have the one guy who was flat, you know, Angel to Angel his whole career.
All right.
So he's Mr. Angel. Rod Carew, the problem with him is he never hit with a person on base. Like, he had those kind of padded stats, and he would be good. Kind of like, you know, some of the other current guys, maybe A-Rod or somebody who's not a clutch
hitter. He was a slap hitter. He was very much like Tony Gwynn with more discipline at the dinner table.
Yes.
Quickly, some other 29s, the great netminder Kenny Dryden, some might say the greatest goalie in NHL history. Michel Dion, my personal favorite goalie of all time, great Pittsburgh Penguin goalie. Ron Johnson won a Super Bowl ring. Todd Fedoruk, a hockey player. So I guess we'll go Eric Dickerson after your harsh.
Dickerson.
But Ken Dryden, though, if he's the greatest goalie in NHL history, you might make a case he's better than Eric Dickerson, who's probably top half dozen. But let's go Eric Dickerson. It's a football show after all, right? And speaking of a football show, this program is available on iTunes, and we appreciate you subscribing and making comments and all that jazz. What'd you have to say there, Ranker?
No, I was going to say it's been a pretty nice run for people who have played at Anaheim Stadium. Recently we had, Gene Autry didn't play, but Gene Autry was 26. We got Vladimir Guerrero at 27, and now Eric Dickerson at 29.
Vlad Guerrero, maybe you make a case, is your greatest of all time. I know he came from Montreal.
He's
I know the
Montreal
whole
guy.
By the way, I say that this is a football program on a football network, the NFL Network. We record this midday on Thursday night at 10:00 in the p.m. Eastern. You can watch A Football Life, a great documentary program. I'm sure you've been looking at that with Belichick and Reggie White and Kurt Warner and everything else. Tonight, Walter Payton gets his turn. 10 o'clock Thursday night. Friday, it airs again at 4 p.m. Eastern, and then Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Be sure to check that out. And speaking of that, from what I've read of it, I've read, I'd say about a third of it so far, a very nice new book, but it's getting all sorts of heat. Like I say, it's Sweetness, The Enigmatic Life of Walter Payton. Joining us right now, the author, the man who wrote the incendiary column about John Rocker for Sports Illustrated years ago, books about Clemens, Bonds, the 86 Mets, and the 90s Cowboys. It's Jeff Pearlman. What's going on, man?
Hey, I just want to say for the record, the Rocker piece actually wasn't a column. It was a straight sort of news story. He just happened to be a very racist human being. So people almost remember, like, you slammed Rocker. I actually quoted him directly in a news story, and, he said what he said. So
You were just doing a normal piece, right? And you were driving in a car with him, and then he flipped out, so to speak?
Yeah, it was pretty much 7 hours of me and John Rocker and him sort of enlightening me on his views on, you know, gays, blacks, New York City. It's funny, though, the one group he did not insult were Jews, and I'm actually Jewish, so maybe if I were Christian, he would have done that, too. I don't know.
Well, Jeff, like I say, you're getting all sorts of attention for the new book, and I guess I'll ask you the first question. Let's just get right to it. Why do you hate Walter Payton so much?
It's funny, the last sort of paragraph or section of the book in the acknowledgments, I actually write, I love Walter Payton, and I do love Walter Payton. I think Walter Payton was a genius, you know, artistic genius as a football player. I think he was incredibly good to fans, more so than any sort of hero I've ever covered or written about. His decency to fans, the way he touched fans, the way he approached fans, the way he had time for fans was remarkable. You know, that being said, I set out to write a definitive, all-encompassing biography of Walter Payton, not a puff job, not a love piece, but a definitive sort of tale of his life. And when you find out, for example, that the person you're writing about struggled with depression after his career was over and struggled to such a point that he was contemplating suicide, if you're writing a book, a definitive biography of someone, I just don't know how you don't write about it, I guess is my answer. I just don't know.
Do you suppose that this sort of negative, because over the last couple of weeks, you've gotten a lot of heat, especially out of Chicago. Do you suppose that it's because people didn't anticipate that? They didn't see Payton that way, whereas you talk about the 86 Mets and the early 90s Cowboys, everybody already knew that they were ne'er-do-wells. I assume that's what it's owed to, right?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think you're right. You know, people didn't expect this of Walter Payton. But I also think it's more than that. I think, I've been saying this, like, I have bad news for all the people who love George Clooney. You know, he goes to the bathroom. You know what I mean? I have bad news for the little girls who are chasing after Justin Bieber. Once you actually track him down, I guarantee you he has some zits. You know, like, it happens. We are not perfect. None of us are perfect. And I do think when celebrities and icons like Walter Payton die young, we tend to sort of place them on a completely ludicrous and unrealistic pedestal where we think they were sort of these gods. And my sort of point is there's nothing wrong with learning that people are human and that people have hardships to overcome. And that, you know, to me, when Mike Dicka took actually pretty reeled it back in a few days later, his criticism. But when Mike Dicka talks about, you know, how dare you do this and blah, 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 like Mike Dicka has devoted a ton of time into his credit helping retired NFL players deal with the hardships of after their careers. Well, here's perhaps the greatest player in the history of the NFL, and lo and behold, we find out that he had hardships too, that he struggled, that he was aimless and sort of lost and had family problems and had painkiller problems and didn't know what to do with himself. And to act like acknowledging such is some sort of crime or that it somehow diminishes the legacy is ludicrous.
Now, Jeff, when you started researching this topic of Walter Payton, did you know all this stuff was in his closet, or was this a surprise to you?
No, it was surprising. I knew a lot about Walter Payton as far as football. And when I was a kid growing up in Mayo Pack, New York, I mean, you know, he was a guy poster on the wall kind of player. But, you know, the first step I took in researching this book was reading Never Die Easy, his autobiography. And I read it and I thought, wow. You know, what is there anything to write about this guy? Because it covered a lot, and it sort of gave the presentation of this amazingly flawless, seamless life. And then I started researching him. And again, you just find out that he's human. People say, "Oh, all this negative stuff." I don't actually view it as negative. I view it as sort of the things that human beings go through. You know, people get divorced, people have struggles, people battle with addiction. I've certainly had struggles in my life. I mean, we all have. So when I found out about it, it wasn't even like I was disappointed. I just thought, oh, this guy was a human being who went through the same sort of things that we all go through.
Well, Rank happens to struggle with his eating habits.
Oh, stop it.
He's on a three pizza a day habit. But Ditka, you say he backtracked a little bit, but initially he said he would go so far as to spit on you. And then the thing that's ridiculous is that he wondered why you took 12 years to write the book after Payton, 12 years after the death of Walter Payton. Obviously that's coming, I assume, from a visceral place for Ditka, his coach and everything else. But how do you react when you hear someone like that, or for that matter, anybody react so negatively about something you've just spent 2 years of your life working on?
I think it's incredibly flawed sort of logic. I mean, if you look at the great biographies that have been written, and I'm not saying mine is, you know, one of the all-time great biographies, blah, blah, blah. But like, if you look at the great biographies, you're looking at books written about John F. Kennedy, let's talk sports, Vince Lombardi and Roberto Clemente, both by David Moranis, who might be the best out there, about deceased people and with their flaws included and their problems included. And then you go, I mean, one of the best biographies of this year was Manning Marable about Malcolm X, which talked into the fact that, you know, this outspoken leader had dalliances in homosexuality. And I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. I'm just saying it was a shocking thing to read about Malcolm X. This is what biography is. biography is taking a person's life, and preferably a whole life. And I actually think you're better writing a biography when someone is deceased, because you have the entire life to look at and to examine. And the true narrative of a person's life really doesn't take place until the person is deceased, and you have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So to say, oh, how dare you write the true story of someone's life after he died, you're basically saying we are not allowed to learn from history. We can only learn from history if we can take it with sugarcoating and happy, happy talk. And if we ever write anything about a person that might be negative or hurtful or sort of damage our image of them, that's wrong. And the thing that also has been bothering me is people keep saying to me, oh, the family, what about the family? And it's certainly something you think about as a writer. But I really think what bothers most people and what has bothered most people in Chicago isn't the fact that I wrote something that's going to hurt some people. It's that I wrote something that hurt them, and that they had an idealized image of Walter Payton, an unrealistic image of Walter Payton. And the truth is, he was a man just like me and, you know, my dad and 8 million people out there.
I think that's the problem, is that people perceive it as mean-spirited. They want to know about the Walter Payton who ran the hills, not the one who was pounding the pills.
Right.
Oh, you rhymed there.
Yeah, that was very nice. Are you feeling ill? I mean, your question answer, I will. I mean, I just think like...
chill with it.
You want me to, yeah, right. I just think that, if you want to... Look, if you are a diehard Walter Payton fan and you strictly want to know about the football player, and that's it, and you want to have your memories, that is completely and totally understandable. And there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And I would actually say, and my publicist would kill me for this, don't read the book. Because the book is a true story, and there's tons of positive in there. And there are things about him that people just don't know about, amazing things about his rise from segregated Columbia, Mississippi, him almost going to Kansas State but going to Jackson State, him changing his age to try and win the Heisman Trophy, the how he got his nickname Sweetness, which nobody knows, I guess, before I start talking about this. You know, like, there are all these things in there. But if you don't want to know about the man, if you would rather just have a, sort of a surface image, again, I totally understand it, and I can appreciate that, and you probably shouldn't read a biography on it.
Well, actually, do that. I read that, and it is great. Tell the story of how he came to be Sweetness.
Well, there's always, like, you ask people, I've asked people, do you know how he became Sweetness? And people always say, sweet runner. And I always say, nope. And they say, you know, sweet guy. And I always say, nope, which he was both, obviously. But he was the NFL used to have this game, which I just wish they had because I think it's awesome, but they'll never have again. Or right around when training camps opened, they used to have the defending Super Bowl champions mm-hmm. play a team of college all-stars. And in 1975, the Steelers were defending champions, and it's all college all-stars who just graduated. So this team in 75 was like Walter Payton, Randy White, Steve Barkowski, Ken Huff, Pat McAnally, all these different guys. And they're working out at Northwestern, just coincidentally, not that far from where the Bears train. And one day, Payton takes a handoff in practice, and he takes a handoff and he approaches a defensive back. And he just screams out, your sweetness is your weakness. And he cuts and runs past him. And everyone's like, what the hell did Walter Payton just say? Something about your sweetness? Sweetness? What the hell is that? And he's like laughing it up. They're all laughing up. And the next day he shows up and he's writing sweetness across the blackboard. And that's how everyone started calling him sweetness.
Excellent, excellent. And by the way, I am in lockstep with you on that. I was in Cowboy Stadium. That was the first time I became aware of it. They had a giant photograph of Bob Lilly tackling somebody, and I couldn't figure out what NFL team it was. I couldn't place the uniform, and then I realized it was the college all-star game. Yes, yes, and a million yeses. We have to get this game back. How great would it be for the college all-stars to play the defending Super Bowl champions? This is dynamite.
It is, but it will never happen, I think, for insurance reasons more than anything. In fact, I'll tell you something interesting. It's Pat McAnally, who went on to punt for the Bengals for about a decade, was a wide receiver punter out of Harvard, and he played in that game. He was playing wide receiver. And he broke his leg in the end zone and missed the entire rookie year.
We'll see. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Of course, no agent would ever allow their player to participate in a game like that. Now, all right, but I don't want to belabor the point, but devil's advocate, do we need to know? I mean, because I'm with you. I'm on your side of things. But do we need to know, I mean, you know, celebrities in general, it feels like, what, about 15 or 20 years ago, we started to sort of track them through these magazines that are out that many people hate, other people read in the grocery aisle, about to find out if Brad Pitt is with Jennifer Aniston or Angelina Jolie.
Right.
Now
right.
It seems like, I don't know what the decisive moment was. Was it A-Rod when he was photographed on the streets with a dancer or what it was, but it seems like now the floodgates are open through Deadspin and everything else, where we're now finding out about athletes. And was it a better time when we didn't know about Mickey Mantle boozing and he was merely a hero to people for his deeds? Or are we better off now?
See, it's an interesting question. I actually think, and this probably won't be a popular answer, I don't need to see a picture of Matt Leinart sitting in a hot tub, you know, with a bunch of women, you know, and I think, or, you know, what happened to like Sean Salisbury. I mean, things like that really bother me. It really bothered me. I think there's a big jump, though, from, you know, A-Rod getting fed popcorn from Cameron Diaz and someone has passed and his career and life are done and looking back at his life and sort of explaining and analyzing his life in a work, you know, in a 460-page book, a biography. It's not a sleaze job. I mean, this book, I don't know if either of you have read it yet, but it's not a sleaze job at all. It is a definitive biography of his life. It's not me standing outside the Payton household looking for, looking through the toilet paper. Like, so I think there's a big jump. I think definitive biographies are important. And I'm not saying, look, Walter Payton wasn't Malcolm X and he wasn't John F. Kennedy. He was a football player. But he was a historic football player and an iconic football player. And I do think there are things to learn from people's lives. And people have said to me, how would you feel? I mean, you'd be dead, so you wouldn't know. But how would I feel if I were dead and I knew that someone was writing a biography of me and writing about my skeletons? And the truth of the matter is, I would be 100% okay with that. Because I don't, and it would never happen, obviously, but like, I'd be okay with that. Because I think definitive biographies of people's lives, their full lives, are very, very important teaching tools sort of on what transpires in the world. I just do. I really do. I love biography. I do.
And you raised a good point. It's something with the players' association, the alumni, raising awareness of what happens to players afterwards. So it does serve a purpose there, too. But I do want to say, before we let you go, Jeff, I'm a big fan of your work. I loved your book on the Cowboys. So now I'm excited to know what's next for you. What's the one thing? What do you want to tackle next?
I have a dream book, and I don't know if it can come true. I really do. I'm not kidding about this. I want to write a USFL biography.
Oh, that would be great.
I love the USFL.
Let me ask you guys a question for real. I'm always told, no one would buy it. And I keep saying Donald Trump, Reggie White, challenging the NFL. I just think it's a great, great story. But would people be interested in it?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Personally, I was. I think you and I are roughly the same age. I guess we all are about the same age. And yeah, listen, when you are, at least for fellas like us, I mean, I obsessively watch the USFL.
Love the USFL.
And I think you can make a pretty good argument that, you know, people sort of lump it in with the XFL or the WFL, but it was a legit league. And in fact, the Reggie White winds up obviously going down as one of the all-time greats, and he's in the Hall of Fame. But there are a lot of guys, Herschel Walker, maybe Mike Rozier.
Steve Young.
Steve Young's a Hall of Famer. I'm thinking of guys, though.
Oh, yeah, Calvin Bryant.
That maybe would have wound up in the Hall of Fame. Cribbs, if he doesn't leave Buffalo and go to Birmingham, he maybe winds up in the Hall of Fame. It's fascinating stuff how it shaped individual careers and how it was a legitimate threat to the NFL. So, yes,
or
absolutely.
Even somebody like
Bernie. It's also funny how, like, you know, like the Breakers played in three cities in 3 years.
Yeah. Are
like,
you? I cannot believe Perlman. You're reading my mind, man. I was just going to say, what's awesome about it is, I don't want to steal your thunder, but I always make the point about the Breakers that they played in three cities. And unlike the L.A. Lakers, which makes no sense, or the Utah Jazz makes no sense, they go from Boston, which is associated with water, to New Orleans, to Portland, all of which have a body of water near them.
I know, and also the Chicago Blitz and Arizona Wranglers were traded for each other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's awesome. It's just awesome. Yeah, so thank you. I really would love to write that. If I can get a deal for that, I'm so into it. It's not even fun.
Well, let me ask you this then. I did a very slight amount of research. Unlike you, you're a bona fide journalist. I just like to recklessly speculate about things. But I did look a little bit up on you, and you started out as a food and fashion critic?
I did. I was the Nashville, Tennessee in 1994. I graduated from college, and my first job was a food and fashion writer.
All right, listen.
I had no expertise, none.
Well, listen, you must have a little bit, and so now let's start there. Best USFL uniform, Mr. Fashion.
I would have to say, easy, man. Oklahoma Outlaws.
A good one. But I'm sorry, yeah. That's incorrect. The best one, the Washington Federals. I don't know why no one's replicated that dark green in the silver pants. No, it was very handsome.
Trivia. Who did they become?
Who did the Generals turn into?
No, the Federals.
They relocated.
Orlando?
No. Oh, and who is the coach of Orlando?
I don't know.
Lee Corso.
Wow. Lee Corso, that's right. Is that right? I consider myself knowledgeable about USFL, and I didn't know that one.
The Federals became Orlando.
You got to bring the heat, son. Next time you come here, you bring the heat.
Apparently. And what about, since we're talking uniforms, go ahead. What's the best NFL uniform?
I would have to say old school Tampa Bay.
Wow.
Whoa, bold, the creamsicle.
A bold stroke. All right. I disagree with you, but you're entitled to your opinion. You know what? You were a food critic. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you. Best condiment.
Relish, man.
I mean, I agree with you on the larger stuff, but it's when we start to narrow it down to the specifics that we part ways, Perlman. No, of course.
I'm sorry.
You know what? It's hot. It's dark mustard, but look out for sriracha. It is rising with a bullet. Look out at all the other condiments.
I'll keep an eye on that one.
Okay, please do. All right, listen, Jeff Perlman, great work. Always enjoy reading your stuff. And Sweetness, the enigmatic life of Walter Payton. Can be had all over the place right now. And, let's kibitz about the USFL or anything else you want to yap about sometime soon.
All right, I appreciate it. Take care.
All right, be well. I like him, Rank. It's funny. We talked to Theismann last week, and I agreed with him on virtually everything he had to say. And this time, again, at least in macro terms, I agree with Perlman quite a bit on just about everything.
And we need that USFL book.
We absolutely do. But let me just say this to you. I don't want to embarrass you or anything, Rank. But before we started, you said that you don't approve of this sort of thing, of exposing the three-dimensional human being when it comes to athletes.
I was initially wary of making what seemed like mean-spirited kind of biographies or whatever. But what he said makes sense. I mean, there's things with that?
Because I was waiting for you to jump in and say, listen, I disapprove, sir.
Why? I'm not up on Mount Pius like you.
Well, no. It's not about being up on Mount Pius. I thought you were in Lake Cowardice.
No. I make my judgment at the Barnes & Noble book counter by not buying it.
What's the last book you read?
The last book? I'm reading Oscar Goodman's book right now.
I don't know who that is.
He was the mayor of Las Vegas. The mob.
Oh yeah,
lawyer.
I met him once. I interviewed him once. Corolla did. I was on Corolla's radio show. He came in. Yeah,
I was reading that, and before that, I put down a book on the Secret Service.
Good for you, Rank. I like to hear that you're reading books. No wonder you're so smart. That's good. It makes sense.
Thank you.
Right now, Rank, we're going to keep the guest list rolling here. This is great. We talked about Tebow in Side A, what we think. Apparently, we disagree on where Tebow's going and where the Broncos are going this season. Now let's talk to a guy who certainly he's going to have to depend on. If Tebow is going to earn that starting job beyond 2011, this is one guy who's going to have to definitely keep it rolling, having a very nice season so far. Eric Decker, what's going on, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Sure thing. How you spending the bye week?
I came back to Minnesota. I just actually finished up with a workout today, and we go up to my parents' house, spent some time with them, and I got a little stepbrother who's still in high school, and I haven't seen him play football yet, and he's got a game Friday night, so I'm excited for that.
Excellent. Is the U at home, or the Gophers playing in the Twin Cities this weekend?
They are not. No, they got a bye week, so unfortunately I can't see them play.
Oh, you've got to be the best alumnus in the NFL right now, maybe Marion Barber III. Don't you have enough juice to dictate to the Gophers when they schedule their games?
Right, they're going to schedule their games around our bye week, so we can come back home.
Yes, indeed. So, all right, listen, let's talk about what obviously any football fan is talking about the last week or so. Tim Tebow, the fourth quarter he had, that led to John Fox anointing him. I don't know if you heard. That's made the word around the Broncos locker room, right, that Tim Tebow is the starter.
Yeah, you know, we came in Tuesday and had practice Tuesday, Wednesday. Coach Fox had a team meeting that morning and announced that they're going to make a change at the quarterback position. And I think maybe, you know, more guys than not foresaw that coming. But the same time, you know, we got to respect his decision and move forward with it.
Well, listen, I appreciate Eric Decker. If you don't go up on Coy Hill with this, I understand that you want to be politically correct with this. But Kyle Orton has you've developed a nice little relationship with Kyle Orton. You've been having some nice personal numbers pretty much every week so far this season. How does this change affect you? Are you looking forward to working with Tim Tebow?
You know, I am. I am, and I'm a competitor, and I want to win. And whatever I got to do to make that happen. And obviously, we have some timing things that we need to go through, and just I think the practice, the experience we get together is just going to make us more fluid. Because you know, as a receiver and a quarterback relationship goes, there's a lot of routes that are timing, or you know, guys run routes differently. So he's just got to be able to experience that with every guy. And I know that I want to be successful and I want the team to be successful. So that's something that I think we have to stress going forward.
And it seemed that the move to put Tim Tebow at starting quarterback was preordained way back into the preseason. As a player getting ready now going forward, is it kind of a relief to have this behind you and have the quarterback situation settled?
Well, you know, there's always the attention that we had between the quarterback controversy, you know, going into the season, preseason, who's going to be the starter. And, you know, Coach Fox had open competition at every position. And I really believe that Kyle Orton outperformed him in camp. He played real well, you know, and offensively in the preseason, we were clicking. We were moving the ball. We weren't turning the ball over, making plays and stuff. And, you know, things didn't go away in the first five games of the season. So, Coach figures, you know, a change of that position is going to help spark or just change our philosophy.
Well, it's two completely different styles. Orton obviously stands in the park. It has a pretty good arm back there. Tim Tebow running around and struggles to get the ball downfield. How has the offense been tailored now to accommodate that? I mean, do you notice as a wide receiver now a couple of years and looking at those big league arms, spinning it over to you, do you notice a discernible drop off in Tebow's arm strength? And if so, how is that going to affect you personally and your ability to run the deep routes?
Well, I think he has the ability. I've seen flashes in practice. I've seen him throw a ball, you know, through summer workouts. And it's just about being consistent. I think everybody that comes into a league as a young player has a learning curve. And obviously his offense in college was a spread, play action, you know, not many deep throws. They had a couple. But I know that kid's the hardest worker I've ever met. I know if something's to be done, he's going to work towards it. You know, it may not be perfect at first, and that's something that we're going to get better at as time goes on. We may have tailored and just have maybe shorter games, but we do need to stretch the field and have some big plays just to kind of keep the defense honest. And that just comes with work, comes with the grind.
Well, you know, you are sort of a modern-day version of Hines Ward, or probably about 10, 12 years younger than Hines is, but you were, obviously, anybody who watches Big Ten football remembers how dynamite you were. You can get the ball down there yourself, if need be. Who can throw the ball farther, you or Tebow?
Definitely Tebow. And I played a little baseball in my days, but when that ball comes out of my hand, you know, I don't know where it's going and if it's going to even be close to a spiral. I'll give that to him.
All right. See, that's fair. That's being a good teammate. Even if you can't outthrow him, you covered up there. And do you expect that we'll see any Brady Quinn at some point this season?
You know, he's getting rest in practice, and he's been doing well too. He's been consistent. Obviously, you know, Coach wanted to go with Tebow and Brady. I think, you know, is behind it, supportive. Obviously, as a competitor, you want to play, so he's going to keep practicing. Like, you know, just the next play is going to be his, and I know he's working hard.
Well, excellent stuff, Eric Decker. And last question for you. Big news out of the Broncos world for a uniform advocate like me. I love the uniforms. What do you think, the navy blue jersey or the orange jersey?
For home, I'm going orange. I love that orange crush. I think it looks better, too, on us than the blue.
You like the modern-day version, or you like the Elway era better?
I like the Elway era better. You know, I got one of those old school hats with the old logo. I thought that was pretty cool, but you know, obviously things change and designs change as well.
you would think Elway would, you know, he played in that jersey. He's the man in charge. Now you think he would say, we're going back to that look. But Eric Decker, listen, thanks so much for the time. Enjoy your week off and have a good time up there in Minnesota.
I appreciate it. You take care.
All right. Continued thanks, success Eric. To you. Nice guy, Rank.
I like him. Yeah, me too.
Seems like a good teammate, but he was frank. You could read in between the lines. He understands that Tebow doesn't have the same arm that Orton has, that but he's behind him.
Is that what he said?
I'm reading between the lines. He acknowledged it. Yes.
You're taking some liberties with that.
I am not taking liberties. And in fact, he supported Tebow versus his own arm. So that's what I'm saying. He's a good teammate. Anyway, all right, Rank. Denver is not playing. We'll probably jump into the DeLorean to see how they do in Miami in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But right now, how say you? Let's jump into the DeLorean and figure out who wins the biggest games this week. You should be paying attention because we are currently 17-6 on the season. So with that being said,
to the future!
This is what makes time travel possible. The flux capacitor.
All right. Yeah. How's your appetite? Always good. Right. Always good. Right. Well, perfect, because we're in the New Jersey at a New Jersey landmark, Satrials. You remember it from Tony Soprano and the company hanging out there?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think they once put who was it? They ground somebody up in there, right?
Yes. I'm a little nervous. Don't make eye contact with anybody in there.
Put them in the meat grinder. All right. So we'll get to what happened on Monday night in the Meadowlands in just a second, but I dropped you off,
right?
And then I took the DeLorean and I went to a few games. Let me quickly tell you how those worked out. I went to my hometown of Pittsburgh, PA. I paid a visit to Heinz Field. The Steelers, they continue to beat up on these weak sisters of the NFL. Just in time, 27-16, the Steelers take care of the Jags. Then I headed over to our nation's capital, Philadelphia, D.C. Turns out I'm right. I've been saying the Eagles are just about to turn it around. Michael Vick got on track. They followed his lead. They
win. You guaranteed it.
27-17. They take care of the Skins. They're back in it. They're relevant once again. I headed up to the Motor City from there. Everyone's buzzing about them. Long trip over for the 49ers. Quietly also having a nice season. This time, Detroit stays undefeated. 24-14, they beat the Niners. And lastly, I made it over here to the Meadowlands to watch the New York Giants beat the Buffalo Bills 24-17. Where did you head there, Rank?
Yeah, thanks for sending me to all the garden spots. You got to go to the cool places, Detroit, Philadelphia. I went to Baltimore.
Yeah.
I did get the best game, though, the two best teams in the AFC, Baltimore and Houston. Baltimore, though, proved to be no contest. They crushed the Texans 28-13. Obviously, the Texans are without Andre Johnson. That hurts a little bit.
Mario Williams.
Yes, right. Things could be a little bit different in the future. But for right now, Baltimore is the best team in the AFC. I did go to I went to Oakland also. Really? Thanks. But the Raiders keep winning in memory of Al Davis. They beat the Cleveland Browns 30-17.
I like this Raiders team. They're going to continue this role for a little while.
And you look
hear
at teams,
me now, believe me later.
You look at teams like that play for something, that have something to prove. The Raiders are going to be a good team in the AFC, maybe the second best team now. We'll see how they keep going. And
seems
finally,
like you're sleeping on a team named the New England Patriots.
See, I'm not super excited about the Patriots defense. The Patriots defense looks absolutely awful. They're going to be good in the regular season. They're going to win games like they did. They beat the Cowboys 34-23. It was kind of a nice game. I like Gillette Field.
That was nice. Did you have some chowder?
Yeah, John Lackey and I, Josh Beckett, we hang out. We drank some beers.
Oh, you had the fried foods.
Beers, you know, chicken wings, all that stuff. We watched the Patriots win 34-23, but that defense is a concern to me. Tony Romo, though, had 3 touchdowns, which was good for my fantasy team.
And then, of course, just before we headed over here to Satrials, we went back to the Meadowlands to watch the Jets get it on there. They take care of business. 17-9, they pull it out. Hell say you, Rank.
Mark Sanchez at his best, doing nothing.
That's a shame. That's about as good as it's going to get. Enough to get a W and keep Rex Ryan's playoff hopes flickering, though they may be. Keep them alive. Mark my words. Here's another believe me later. The Jets shall not be in the postseason. All right, Rank, what say you? Let's go in there. Let's pick up some smoked links and grill them up on the sidewalk there.
But no eye contact, and don't talk to anybody.
All right, let's just head back. Let's just head back to last Thursday. Here we go. All right, good times. Listen, Rank, lots of fun. We talked to Perlman on Side A about sweetness and about journalistic ethics. Heady stuff. Also, USFL. That's fun to talk about. Condiments. That was good.
You don't like relish, though. I'm surprised. Where was you?
Nah.
You're
sweet.
Cowardice.
Too sweet.
See?
I shot him down. Now, what else did you want me to say about it?
You lightly moved on to brown mustard.
All right.
By the way, there's this place in Huntington Beach where you can create your own burgers. I put the spicy brown mustard on a hamburger. Awesome.
Oh, delicioso. Delicioso. All right, listen. I don't think there's a better note that we can finish on, so let's just stop here. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.